Hi, this is Kenneth Nguyen. A few years ago, before I launched the Vietnamese podcast, my father and all of his siblings passed away. Their passing marked the loss of their stories and the connection to my grandparents and great-grandparents. This is partly what inspired me to start the work of the podcast. Many of you still have the opportunity to record and preserve the legacies of your own families. I've just begun to sit with a few families now for interview sessions to record the rich histories of their parents and the lives of the generations that preceded them. Don't let your family's stories go untold. Take a moment to reach out to me, and together we will bring out your family's story on a recorded journey. I've included the link in the episode description. Visit VietnamStoryBank.com today for more information.
My name is Joseph Nguyen. I am a teacher in the first ever Vietnamese dual immersion program in the state of California in Westminster School District. I teach advanced Vietnamese literature as well as U.S. history in Vietnamese. I'm also a part-time lecturer. The last year was at Cal State Fullerton. This year I'm starting this fall at Cal State Long Beach and teaching Vietnamese American Studies.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all of...
Great. And the Orange County Department of Education just got a Vietnamese superintendent over there. That's a big position.
Yes, I did hear about that with its own grain of salt, but that's definitely... We can definitely talk about that.
Yeah. But it's a big position. I mean, the biggest position in the United States, if we really break it down, right? That's the superintendent of a school district of a whole county.
Yeah, definitely. It's both big and not big, because the way our education system politics works is that counties do not have as much power as local school districts, and so there's only so much they can do. But definitely they do play a big role in shaping educational policy and, you know, the direction and how the county collaborates with different local districts. But yeah, really big strides for Vietnamese Americans.
My biggest question to you is, I mean, since I've known you for a while now, what got you interested in learning about Vietnamese language and the culture? You're born here, you're much younger, and to sit and talk to you, you know, it makes me really understand that you come with a long history of looking into language and culture of the Vietnamese people.
Mm-hmm. This is actually a super interesting story, because I'd have to go all the way back to when I was young. And I'll say this kind of as a really interesting, I feel like I meet different people at different parts of my life, and I'm totally different people at those different parts. And so I really have to give a background on how I grew up to show how I became who I am now. And I think that's a really good precursor, because I grew up not knowing how to speak a word of Vietnamese, barely a word. And my parents came here in 1975, like many Vietnamese refugees. My mom came when she was 12 only. So her English is better than her Vietnamese. My mom would go to church, and so all the Vietnamese old ladies would call her Mekon, because Mekon is kind of like, you know, American child, because my mom's accent or her language wasn't even that good. And my dad came when he was 17 as well. I come from a very, my family background is interesting, because since my parents were kind of like 1.5 generation, you know, they went to high school in America. My mom graduated here, Long Beach Polytechnic High School. I'm living in this house. I moved here with my mom, and this is literally the house that my mom grew up in. She doesn't remember much from Vietnam, but she remembers more from Long Beach. My mom went to UC Irvine. My dad went to Cal State Northridge. They became engineers. And so I grew up in a pretty, you know, well-to-do background. I have 8 people in my family. So six siblings. I'm the fifth child out of 6 children. And my parents mainly spoke English to me. I did not speak much Vietnamese at all. And if I did, I'd always respond in English. Like, many Vietnamese parents, my parents made me go to Vietnamese school. And growing up, my identity was not my affiliation with being Vietnamese was not that strong. My parents wouldn't, and it wasn't that strong for my parents either. They definitely educated me to be a strong Catholic. They're very traditional Vietnamese Catholic parents, but the Vietnamese was important to them, but it wasn't like a deal breaker. And so I grew up kind of, knowing I was Vietnamese, but I didn't really think too much of it. My parents aren't super politically motivated. They're not super nationalist. They're just normal people just trying to give me a good education. So with that and in mind, I grew up in Little Saigon though. And so the community of people that I knew in Westminster, specifically Huntington Beach, California, because I grew up in Huntington Beach, was two worlds for me. So in most of the schools I went to was all white people because I went to school in Huntington Beach. So one of, five Asians. And so I always kind of felt a bit off. And I remember, this shows how bad my Vietnamese was. I remember in first grade, they wanted me to do a presentation about, Vietnamese New Year, that Chinese New Year, whatever you want to call it. And I remember, the teacher called it Lai Sai. And then she wanted me to give a presentation on it. And so I went up to all these people saying, oh, this is what Lai Sai is, even though it's Li Si. And I didn't know, that's how bad my Vietnamese was because like everyone was like, oh, wow, that's so cool. And I thought I was, doing really cool, but obviously wasn't. So I could barely say the word pho, but going to Vietnamese school, they don't teach you how to speak. They don't teach you how to listen. They already expect you to know how to speak Vietnamese when you're growing up. And so, but they do teach you how to read and write because they assume that you know how to speak already. You just need to learn how to read and write. It's kind of, and there's a whole history on that because, back in the day, everyone knew how to speak already. So there wasn't the new generation like me who couldn't speak and they didn't have pedagogy to help. But so they were just, I would, it was a Catholic school. So I just copied down, Jing Da every single day. And I had a really good accent because of that, because they taught you how to read out the words. And I was really good at writing down the right Vietnamese words. And that's how I got my accent because I didn't know how to speak, didn't know how to communicate, but I didn't know how to pronounce. And I remember we had to like read Bible verses and I would sound super good. And they're like, you speak Vietnamese so well. And I'm like, in Vietnamese. And I'll be like, I have no idea what you're saying. Like they would say like, oh, con nói tiếng Việt. Yeah, like, what? And I would be like, I'm sorry, what? Con không tiếng Việt. And I would be like that because I basically was good at what I was taught, which was how to write, how to do that. Going up to, high school was when I started feeling a lot more dissension of being Vietnamese, which meant
Let me
like,
ask you something, Joseph. What age did your mom and dad put you into Vietnamese school, Vietnamese church?
Went from like kindergarten, but then I quit in like fourth grade, third grade.
Okay, so you only went for like 5 or 6 years.
I didn't go my whole life. I only went maybe like, 2, 3 years at most. And I remember I hated it because all my friends spoke Vietnamese and I didn't speak Vietnamese and I didn't understand what the teacher was saying. And so I was like, okay, mom, I want to quit. And they're like, okay.
Yeah, and I ask you all this because, my children right now do not speak a lick of Vietnamese, and they're 5 and 7. And I know that a lot of audience people are listening to this, and many of them, wonder when is it too early, when is it too late, and how do we get as we get on with our discussion, people who get to hear what you're about to say about learning Vietnamese will understand that, if you grew up and you didn't learn and speak Vietnamese, it's going to be okay as long as you start. And I want to get into why, in a little bit, why it's so important that we learn the language. But I also want to get into the nuances of why learning a specific way and what we're learning is important to talk about. So,
Yeah, definitely.
that's why. Yeah, so that's why, that's why we're here. And I want to know, at what point did you start to say, I get that I can do this and pronounce it and read and write this and make it sound well, good. But how do you, like, when did it turn for you and go, you know what, I'm going to explore this and make this my life's work?
Exactly. And it's super interesting because if you asked what I was, how I thought of my Vietnamese identity as a high schooler or a middle schooler, I would say resentment, like many second generation people. I didn't, everything I associated with Vietnamese culture, especially because I did not speak the language, was, old traditional Vietnamese parents, the Catholic part was on top of that. Who, expected all of these things from me, and did a lot of had these cultural ways of thinking about obedience and respecting the elders and you having to serve your family over your individual interests. All of those things were things I very much resented, and also humiliation, and it was constant humiliation because I live in the center of Little Saigon. Outside of Little Saigon, I don't know how people, deal with their identity as much, but for me, it was I'm meeting a Vietnamese person every single day, from family and not family. And my family spoke to me in English, but still, I go to go to the pho store, they'd speak to me in Vietnamese, and I always feel humiliated that I couldn't speak back. And I remember back then, besides pho, the one word that I knew was mat gop. That was the one word that I knew because all the elder people kept on saying that to me, cái thằng này mắc gốc, con này mắc gốc, because lost is, and mắc gốc means lost your roots, right? And that always made me feel a certain way because it made me push away from the culture more because I was always like never enough to never Vietnamese enough for the Little Saigon community around me. And my dad would always talk about like famous Vietnamese people. My family background, we were, we come from like a line of royal people. So my dad would always be like, "Oh, we're the descendants of Nguyễn Quang Trung, Nguyễn Huệ, the biggest king, the most important king of Vietnam, or whatever." And I'm like, "I don't know who this guy. He looks like Confucius." And I make that joke with like my siblings. And then he'd talk about Phan Bui Châu and all the other Vietnamese revolutionary people because my grandfather was involved in that against the French in the back in the day. And I didn't know any of that either. So I was just like constantly humiliated. And in high school, this was very become a lot more salient for me because I made a lot more Vietnamese friends going to Marina High School in the area versus before where I was insulated from that because most of my school was mostly white. So I actually thought it was better for me to go to a, not total Vietnamese school, to go into Marina and go and joining clubs and everyone, a lot of people around you, especially in the higher honors AP classes are Vietnamese. And I remember it was my graduation, and I was the valedictorian of Marina High School. So I gave a graduation speech, and I wanted to, say like a word of Vietnamese. So to like thank my parents, right? And it came off super bad. Like it came, I was like, "Oh, con yêu rồi bố mẹ rất nhiều. It's bố mẹ rất là tốt." And I remember after it like the pronunciation was super bad because I was so nervous. And
It's so crazy. I do not believe you wrote that because your Vietnamese is so much more sophisticated. I just can't imagine somebody
exactly.
like
That's
you
why I say
writing
I
that.
meet people at different points of time and I'm a
Yeah.
totally different person. And one of my most poignant memories was that one of my close friends at the time, her mom was there. And, her mom made us after we were taking pictures, and her mom made a like a sly comment at my friend, and she was like, "Oh, this guy, it's such a waste. He's such a talented valedictorian young kid. It's too bad his Vietnamese is horrible."
Wow.
And that really got me. I'm a high school senior, and it made me really think about what I wanted in life because On paper, I was like the perfect child. I was good grades. I was, in varsity tennis. I did orchestra. I'm the perfect Asian child to every single Vietnamese kid. But the one thing that prevented me from parents or friends respecting me and like people like laughing at me when they asked me something, they drive me home and I didn't know how to talk to them was because I didn't speak Vietnamese. Another, time. Like I remember I felt humiliated was when I was driving my friend's dad was driving us on the freeway. He got pulled over by the cop, and the cop was me saying some super racist stuff to my friend's dad, and I didn't say anything because I didn't his my friend's dad did not know how to speak English. And so I couldn't really communicate all the racist things that the cop was saying, like, oh, if you can't speak Vietnamese, then maybe you shouldn't have a license. Why are you here?
Gosh.
And then the Vietnamese dad was just kind of like, nodding and just being like, haha, I'm sorry, right? And that made me just feel really bad that I couldn't help this my friend's dad out because I couldn't speak, even though my friend did, but or even defend him. Right, or tell him about what happened. And so, in college, I definitely had this commitment to learn, a bit more about that language because it was trying to like to escape from the humiliation. And I was always good at languages already. I was an AP Spanish in high school. So at the time of me as a high schooler, I took AP Spanish. I also took Japanese, AP Japanese. Because I just love languages that much. And so at 18 years old, I was better at Spanish and Japanese than I was at Vietnamese. Like, I could, and I went to Japan like after high school with like a high school group. And I was like, I love, Japanese. And I was like, maybe I can do the same for Vietnamese, knowing that I'm good at languages already. So UCLA, when I came in, I was a pre-med student, like most, like most Vietnamese or Asian kids, I thought I wanted to be a doctor because that's all I knew. And in sophomore year, I took this class. I decided to take a class just for fun. It was Vietnamese one, Vietnamese one for non, for non-Vietnamese people. So all my class was a lot of Vietnamese kids like me who didn't speak, and then the other half was white kids.
Who taught that
And
class?
it was a professor named Go Tu Ba. At UCLA, and then later in my intermediate advanced classes, it was with a
Quincy.
professor named Tai Quinzi, who is very well known in the community. And I loved it, it was fun because you get to, you just learn stuff like bạn có khỏe không? Yeah, tôi khỏe. It was like very, very basic stuff. But then I was like, for me, I was like, I wish that I got taught this when I was in Vietnamese school because they don't teach you like that. They just make you write down like three, four paragraphs of words, and you just have to memorize it. And usually, I didn't even like do the dictation right. Like they technically speak it, and then you write it down. But I always memorize the text because it was in the textbook anyways beforehand, so I can get the good grade. Because if I was anything, I was a good student, but I was not a good speaker. So. I even after 1 year of Vietnamese classes, I still kind of sucked, but it gave me kind of like a renewed passion because I, at the same time, like many other people my age, I got into Vietnamese culture through my Vietnamese student union or Vietnamese student association. And so, I did Vietnamese culture nights where I danced traditional dance. I got to watch, I remember I watched Vietnamese culture night at UCLA for the first time. And how Vietnamese culture nights works is that they usually have a 2 hour long skit that the director writes him or herself about like something going on in a Vietnamese American family. And I remember it was a story about parents not getting along with their children, and their children wants to the children wants to be an engineer, but the parents won't let them. And then the family has all their fights. And I remember watching that for the first time, and it was the first time I've ever appreciated anything Vietnamese. And I was like, wow, That is my story. Like, that's something I connect to for the first time in my life. And I remember crying that day because I never heard a story that like I related to. For my whole life, I just assumed that, going, resenting your parents and, having that Asian tension that, a lot of the YouTubers, kind of made fun of strict Asian parents. I just thought that was the norm. But I never really thought about it in a relatable way. Like, this is the relationship with your parents and, you can still be proud of yourself and, move forward without being a drag or humiliation to your parents. And it really got to me. Then what really changed, what really got me to Vietnamese studies was when I started taking second and third year, which is intermediate advanced. And with this old man, 76 years old, his name was Thái Quyên Di. And Thái Quyên Di in the community, he's well known in this community. He's a poet. He is a writer. He has been teaching Vietnamese for the past 30, 40 years. And so he's very well respected. And I remember like just saying, oh, I'm taking a class of Vietnamese with this guy named Thái Quyên Di. And my mom was super enthusiastic. And she's like, oh my gosh, he's like, super famous. And I'm like, he's famous? What? Then I stalked his Facebook and I saw that he had 1,000 likes per post. And I was like, what the, who is this guy? And he would, and I never saw my parents be so enthusiastic about something before. When I get good grades, my parents know I'm a good student. And so like when I get 4.0 in high school, they're just like, okay, whatever, right? Because my parents kind of expect to know that I already do well. But when they heard I was learning Vietnamese, they were like, oh my gosh, I'm so proud of you. And they tell all my other five siblings who we constantly compete for each other for attention. They're like, Joseph is learning Vietnamese. You should learn Vietnamese too. And that gave me like a newfound boost to like, maybe I should even learn more about identity. Plus, I had this professor who came from 1975 and he would tell us all these stories about his life in Vietnam and also nuances of the Vietnamese language. And he made it fun in the sense that he loved telling stories. So, an example would be like, the word mình, right? Mình means me, right? Or myself. But the real word, the real meaning of cái chữ mình là body, okay? And so khi mình nói một mình, your body is alone. But then he asked the question, then why, when you get married, then why do you say the word mình ơi, like honey, right? Technically it means honey. But what you're really saying is my body. So when you're saying mình ơi, my body, because when, the husband and the wife come together, they become one body, một mình. Don't find một mình alone, but một mình, one body. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so romantic.
Beautiful.
I
It's
never
a
really thought
beautiful,
about the language
beautiful
that
language.
way.
Let's be clear. That is only in the north. And that level of sort of breaking down that word, that exists a lot in the north. But I would actually say, the other, in the south, there's a totally different mechanical thing going on that that exists. For better or for worse, but we cannot, we can, we can get into that.
And so I was super, just super inspired by this old man who gave me a connection to everything that I knew my past 18 years, but I didn't really connect with, because I lived in Little Saigon. I saw like, the flags, I saw the Trần Hưng Đạo statues, and I met with all these people, but I never really understood them until this old man who, he gave us A's just for being in class. He didn't, care about actually grading us or teaching us or whatever. He wasn't a good teacher, actually. A
He
lot
was
of
not a good teacher.
He was not a good teacher in terms of learning Vietnamese language, but he was a really good teacher in making me understand my parents. Because he's not a, and this actually goes later into the problems of Vietnamese language pedagogy, but he teaches the old way, which means you come and teacher comes into the classroom and just tells stories. They don't make, like teachers today, we do a lot of work, right? Every single minute is planned. We have an activity plan. We make materials, but he teaches the old way where you give them just a reading and then you stand up in front of class and you just say whatever you want.
Well,
And
let's debate this out real quick. Do you think that if he was there to do it the new way, and really there to teach you so you can learn. What if that didn't spark your interest? It wouldn't have created the Joseph Wynn that we know today, because he came in with a bunch of stories, a bunch of romantic notions of the words that are Vietnamese, and that sparked an interest. So in some weird way, that way of teaching is also something that is productive.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's missing in the American education system because our education system has been so systematized. We believe there is a right way of teaching based on research-based, and we sometimes forget the charisma of just teaching and learning from
Story.
somebody who has experience. There's definitely a lot of that missing, but I can also say I was inspired by him, but at the same time, he didn't teach me shit compared to the first professor that I had, because the first professor was from Vietnam. She taught me language well. She said, "Bạn có khỏe at home?" And then we would always repeat back, "Yeah, em khỏe," and stuff. I learned that good basics, but he did not do any of that. As a Vietnamese speaker, I was always, me and my friends would be frustrated because I wasn't actually learning stuff, but we didn't really care because we were UCLA students who were stressed with by a lot of classes, and we were happy to get the free A and just listen to stories. So it was like both. But no, it was, I definitely felt inspired by the way that he would talk about things and that you can't ask your family members because you live with your family. And so there's like always a barrier of them talking about their personal life with you, of them talking about their struggles with you. But he gave it for the first time from a third person perspective. I think that's important because not many people in general get to interact with elders in the community. And when you talk to elders in the community for the first time, you suddenly appreciate them in a way that you physically can't do with family members because of that, all the ties that you have together. Telling stories, he used to live, when he came to America, he was telling how he used to live in a car with his wife and his child in the parking lot in Santa Ana, and he would like be just working, random jobs, from parking lot to parking lot. And suddenly they needed a Vietnamese teacher. So they got him a job at UCLA and Cal State Long Beach. And so he would drive 1 hour, and he still does this to this day, drives 1 hour to LA and 1 hour back, and on different days trying to make ends meet. And I was just like, this is really inspiring because my parents, they would say this, but when a parent tells you this, you kind of be like, oh, when he tells you this, and as a teacher who speaks really well, it like creates connections with stuff you always knew in the bottom of your heart. Because I lived in Little Saigon, I knew all of these things, but I never understood why. And from there, this is why when I applied for graduate school, I wanted to learn more. I was not good yet. Even by the end of college, my Vietnamese was just enough to like say hello and and communicate a little. And then I st just started dating my girlfriend, whose parents did not speak English. And so I felt the pressure of speaking more and more Vietnamese. And so I really wanted to get good for a lot of different reasons, to understand myself, to speak to my girlfriend's parents, to connect with my parents more, to understand my community more. All of those things kind of coalesce together. I'm like, if I'm going to go to graduate school for something, I want to learn more about this community. So I applied for ethnic studies.
Yeah, let me interrupt you. Before we move on, I have two things I want to say. I wanted to go back to this idea of elders and the relatability, the lack of relatability that we have. Because if you think about like the Vietnamese Catholic Church, when we go to church, the elders are all sitting inside sharing the same airspace that we are. But we're not really living and breathing and learning from them because of language cut off because of, I don't know, they don't want to communicate with us. We don't want to communicate with them. There's no connecting, but we're in the same airspace. We're sitting together in community, but there's so much being lost between them leaving Earth and us coming into our lives. And it's just a really sad situation when I think about that inability for us all to connect.
Yeah, and I really agree. And it's one of the reasons why I feel unique in the ways that I am, because I came from a space where I understood what it's like to be on the other end. Sometimes when I meet teachers now as a teacher, my most 99% of them came from Vietnam, and so they believe teaching is a certain way, because they're born in Vietnam, right? And but I was a language learner then, so I know what second generation people want. Sometimes we kind of clash on what is the best pedagogy for students. And I come from a unique perspective. Is I feel like I don't know anybody else in of all, and I'm deep in the community. I know very, very few people who, I don't think I know anybody who like didn't speak Vietnamese, but speak Vietnamese like I do now.
Yeah, there's not many. Maybe Jason Nguyen, the music ethnologist.
Yeah, and
Maybe
usually if you
Jason.
do, they're academics. Yeah.
Yeah, it's maybe Jason. You and Jason are the two guys that I know that probably didn't grow up speaking Vietnamese, but I mean, grew up speaking a little bit, but like really got into it at, later in
Yeah.
life.
And when you learn a language, the way of thinking also changes, my whole conception of the Vietnamese identity was like very typical of what you'd find on YouTube about just general traditional Asian parents, like, oh, all Asian parents are tiger moms who they who do Tai Chi and try to give you life advice and they make you follow what they do. There's so much more diverse than that. But if you don't know the language, there are just so many nuances of culture that you just physically can't understand. Because, if you're in a class, you have to learn that part of the culture as well as learning the language and the idioms, especially when you speak the Ling language, you can't just translate English to Vietnamese and, it has the same meaning. It has a different meaning. And I always repeat this when I'm doing interviews about Vietnamese dual immersion, et cetera, or Vietnamese language. But Thầy Quân Di, he left us with this quote. He got viral around my senior year because he would give us stuffed animals. So he was giving stuffed animals as gifts for good students who like listened to him. They were like little corgi plushies, which are super cute. And then he went viral on Twitter or something because a student recorded him and he got like, millions of likes and tweets and stuff. So on his article, I remember in his interview when he was talking about being viral for giving his college students stuffed animals, he said, when you speak to a person in a second language, you're speaking to their mind. But when you are talking to a person in their mother tongue, their heritage language, you're speaking to their heart. I really resonate with that because you, when you speak Vietnamese or you speak the mother tongue, there are just, ways that you just click with the person. You feel comfortable with yourself. You feel comfortable with the other person. And I can talk about this later, but when I started speaking Vietnamese for the first time in my life to my parents, I learned things about them that they would not have shared to me when they were speaking English. And keep in mind, these are people who I knew my whole life. They spoke in English to me. They spoke English fluently, right? But there's something deep down in your base, and that, the most authentic part of you comes out when you're speaking your mother tongue that you grew up in. And same goes for English. When
Let me stop you right here. This is the thing that kills me about the work that I do. You just nailed it. And I've said this before on another podcast, but I really want to get into this because if you really think about the intimacy of mom and dad and us, right? Our mom and dads and us. When we are living in a functional sort of life with our mom and dad and we love them and they love us, the really messed up part about being second generation Vietnamese for a lot of us is that we don't really know them and they
yeah,
don't really know us. There's
exactly.
no way. I mean,
Very much an immigrant experience in general for a lot of
yeah.
immigrants.
And I can say this with a little bit of immunity because I grew up with my mom and dad speaking and teaching me all the intricacies and nuances of Vietnamese. But then when I step outside and I see my guys who are a little bit older than me, like in their early 50s now, you lose touch with the membrane of that language there's no way to connect. They are not connecting with their mom and dad. And I sit at dinners with them, and it is so painful to watch. And when you can speak the language, this is why it's so important for all of us to learn Vietnamese language as much as we possibly can. And I'm sitting here advocating all this, but I'm not even doing it with my children. And it's probably because I speak fluent English and they do too. And I don't find the need to like connect with them on the Vietnamese, because we're going to be able to connect fully and know each other fully and intimately in English. But the problem of second generation is that we are losing, we've completely lost this ability to understand intimately who our mom and dads and grandparents are. And for you to say, when you became a full-formed adult, you for the first time began to speak to your mom and dad in a totally different way, because now that ability to speak Vietnamese opens up a new, it broadens the parameters of what you can actually think and say.
Yeah, it changes the relationship dynamic for sure, because you see a side to your parents that they've always had, they just never showed it with you. And even now, like, my siblings don't speak Vietnamese at all, right? Because I told you I came from a non-speaking Vietnamese-speaking background, and so I have five other siblings. None of them speaks Vietnamese well, and so I have conversations in front of my mom or my dad in Vietnamese that they don't understand, and about things. And even if I was speaking English, that's also an important thing. Even if I was having that conversation in English and they could understand, they wouldn't, because now once you speak in Vietnamese, you touch on different things, you know. You touch upon like,
but
what
even
happens.
Your mother at 12 though probably doesn't have the vocabulary that you do now, right? I mean, to be honest,
because
I imagine true. I know people who came when they were 12 and they can't digest some of the language that I understand and speak in Vietnamese, because the kind of the formalities that I've gone through in the look at us, we're both like stroking each other's egos, and I hope it doesn't come off that way. I'm just
no. Because that happened with my mom too. I say something, she's like, wow, I haven't heard that word in forever.
Yeah. And, right. And I'm sure that there's this sort of like this even deeper level, if your mother doesn't understand it, you know, but she probably is so thankful that you can communicate and punch way above your weight, right?
Yeah. And it's not just my parents, you know, it's super funny because my brother's about to get married. His parents don't speak English. His fiance in law's parents don't speak English. Same thing with my brother and his other brother and his fiance's parents don't speak English. They speak English okay, but they always like go up to me and they're like, oh, how come? I wish like you know, my son in law or daughter in law spoke Vietnamese like you. And that makes me feel good, because I can make a connection with even like my siblings. Parents-in-law, you know, in a deep way that, you know, my own brother can't, even though he's the son-in-law. And so there are definitely things that make you feel proud about them. I spent a lot of time learning Vietnamese. You know, I spent maybe 6-7 years. It doesn't sound 6-7 years doesn't sound that lot that much when it comes to learning a language, but I committed a lot of time to it, and you see the fruits of your labor. This is why I went into language a lot more, because you know, you study math, you forget it. You study history, you forget it. Yeah, science helps if you become a doctor, but language is the one thing that really sticks with you your whole life, and you can constantly use it if you have a community. And since I live in Orange County, it's now that I know Vietnamese, there's actually not a lot of times where I don't need to use it. I have to, you know, I switch back and forth constantly because now I have that community. And I really empathize with the people who live in these Vietnamese communities, who go to these communities every single day, but can only connect with, understand things on a surface level, because I was like that. It was humiliating. And now, you know, just having that giant community right in front of you, but never really understanding it, is both something that it's definitely a motivation to go forward, and also something that can hold you back. And that's why a lot of friends who don't speak the language that well, they always move out of Westminster Garden Grove and they're replaced by new immigrants who come from Vietnam because we want to settle in, Irvine and Fountain Valley and the nicer suburban areas where we have people like us, not in the, center Little Saigon where half 86% of the population speaks a language you don't understand. So
Well,
yeah,
I
even
recently met
job opportunities and stuff like that too.
I recently met some older guys on a cruise, and we would sit and play on the casino on these boats, and they're in their mid 70s, late 70s, and they would not speak to me in Vietnamese. They won't do it. And this is multiple guys that I've run into in the last few years. We would sit and I would speak in Vietnamese, and they refused to speak in Vietnamese. They would only speak in English. And these are guys that came in like 68, 72, to the United States. And so one time on the last trip, I was just like, hey, why don't we speak Vietnamese? And they're like, because we're in America. We shouldn't speak Vietnamese to each other when there's Americans around. And I found that to be really eye-opening. And it made me understand a different part of, and this was just a few people. I'm not saying that this is all of the first generation who came in the 70s or have this certain pride about speaking English and being white American. This is something that they wanted to become. And that energy is actually passed down to their children who are my age, who are in their 50s now, late 40s. They don't speak Vietnamese. And all of the parents, those guys that I talked to, maybe seven or eight of them, different times in the last year, have said to me, Mike, none of my kids speak Vietnamese. And they were kind of proud about it because they felt like if my kids can't speak Vietnamese, they can only speak in English, and I speak fluent English, then we can still communicate because my English is off the charts and I'm an old guy. So it's this weird kind of like reverse pride that they don't speak Vietnamese at home with their children, that they can only communicate in English
Like speaking English is a status symbol,
is a
right?
status. Speaking English is a status. So therefore, when we're in public, speaking English to me is a status thing that we're like Vietnamese people, but we're amongst white people and we only speak English, which is the craziest thing. But it's like, I feel like a lot of these, first generation people who come in the 70s, they're okay with that. There's not an issue with them. But I think if you're in Little Saigon and you come in the 80s or 90s, it's a different dynamic.
It's actually interesting because what you're talking about is actually one of the biggest issues for what I'm working on, the Vietnamese dual immersion program. Because first off, a Vietnamese dual immersion program is the idea that you learn from the moment you're in kindergarten to the moment you graduate high school. So 13 years, you learn everything, math, science, social science, 50% in English and 50% in your heritage language, which could be Vietnamese, it could be Spanish or whatever. And the idea is that kids are like sponges, so they soak all the language in, and they just learn it, whether they came from Vietnamese speaking backgrounds or not. So you can know no Vietnamese coming in, and the idea is that you graduate high school and you can speak like a native, right? And the one of the biggest issues about Vietnamese dual immersion is that the people we're trying to target, which are Vietnamese speaking parents who want their kids to preserve their language, don't want their kids to go into the program. Because they're afraid that my child, if my child joins this program and they're learning half the material in Vietnamese, then their English will suffer. And if their English will suffer, then they won't do good in the grades. According to research, actually, learning bilingual actually helps your cognitive development. And so, according to the research, students actually do better than monolingual English kids on all of the state exams across the board because they get the content twice in two different ways of approaching it. But to the average Vietnamese parent, they're like, no, I want my child to learn English. We're in America because I want my child to be successful. My child will not be successful if they learn Vietnamese. I think so. Maybe so that attitude of English as a status symbol, I would push even more. And I would say English pathway to opportunity in Vietnamese and not. And to Vietnamese parents who have this conception that if I teach them Vietnamese, then they will not learn English well. And it also comes from a place of sympathy because they came to America and they tried to learn English, some of them to different varying degrees, and they know how hard it is. They face discrimination for not speaking English well. So they feel the pressure of, I need to speak English in America. And so they put it onto their children. And the result is that the children, the second generation, lose their language because their parents intentionally, a lot of them intentionally do not teach it to them. It could be because a parent wants to speak English to them because they want to practice their own. It could be they just don't believe that there's enough time to learn both languages because they don't think it's possible. And it could just be that, learning English is a status symbol. You're American now. I want you to learn English. And, all the stuff in the past, Vietnam is the traditional, the past, the stuff that we don't want. And America is the new, the opportunity. English is the way to move things forward. And a lot of people, especially Vietnamese, who are very practical type of people, as much as we like to show off the veneer that, we love our language, we want to preserve our culture, we want to preserve our traditions. Every Vietnamese person will tell you that. A lot of times when it comes down to it, when we make these conversations with their families, they don't want their kids to join dual immersion program because they're afraid that it just takes time away to be successful in America, which means learning 100% English, which they think makes them do better in school, even though it doesn't. So yeah, that's an interesting aspect to it too. It's immigrants who are against dual immersion,
Yep.
not, the people we want to help, right? Our second generation kids.
And there's so many questions that I have about, like, why would white America allow dual language like Vietnamese immersion inside of an American school? Why would they be for this? Or why would they be for Mandarin? Or I get Spanish, but why would they even be down for like a small language like Vietnamese?
Really good question. And I'll go a little bit through education history. In 1996, there was a proposition called, I believe, maybe it was Proposition 227, I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But the proposition banned bilingual education all across California. And so you were physically not allowed to teach dual immersion programs or teach, let's say, Spanish to immigrants because they wanted people to assimilate into California. English, until 2016, English had to be taught. There was no such thing as teaching Spanish. It was not allowed. It was illegal in California. In 2016, a Proposition 58, I believe, was passed, which allowed bilingual education again to pass for the first time. And this has the one, it's a cultural thing of why that shift happened from 1990s to now. But also, if you think about the school education system, you'll probably hear it on the news. Teachers, there's a teacher shortage, enrollment is declining, and how education is funded is that each school gets funding based on each child and that enrolls in their school. So if you have 800 people who enroll your school and you have 200 people you enroll at that school, the person with 800 kids has four times the funding. And so, schools operate like a business. They need more and more kids to keep things afloat. But with the demographic trends in America, we have less and less kids each year. And so the case for Westminster School District, what happened now that bilingual education is legal again 2020 in 2016 was we are losing a lot of kids. And where we're facing, we might have to, close down schools. And a lot of other schools are like this too. So we need to find a way to keep kids here or to take kids from other districts. It's like a company competing with each other. We're all competing for kids. Kids are money. We're just dollar. Kids are just dollar signs. And we need to find the strategy to, to get the most kids at our school. Before 2016, or around that time, it was all STEM education. You probably heard it a lot. Coding, you'll see some of these schools saying, we teach coding at our elementary school. We teach, science and lab skills and math. And in the 2010s, that was like the big thing to get kids at the schools. Now that everybody has their own STEM type of program, whether it's good or not, they just market it like that. Dual immersion became the new hot thing, especially in California, where 50% of the people are minority majority. So Now they're saying, no, we have Spanish dual immersions, we have Vietnamese dual immersion, specifically in Westminster. And that was the way that they got a lot of kids. Enrollment spiked a lot because now they're taking kids from, Anaheim or from Garden Grove and bringing them to Westminster because some parents do believe that I want my kid to be in this program. No other program offers it. So I'm going to sign my kid up there.
I have
So
a quick
now that
question
comes
though.
in
I have
action.
a quick question when it comes to zoning. Like, I thought that if you were living in Anaheim, your address is in Anaheim, how could you get your kid to Garden Grove? I thought that's against the law.
Yeah, so generally you're zoned to a specific school, but there's a form called inter-district transfer that you can do. So you just fill out a form saying, I would like to transfer to the other school. And usually it's harder to get in school outside of your district, but because maybe they're over capacity, for example. So you're not guaranteed into an out-of-district school. So let's say if you're zoned to Anaheim and you try to get into school in Garden Grove, you might not get into the school in Garden Grove. It's not guaranteed because you don't live in the district. However, with the demographic trend, since everybody is losing kids, they're just trying to make up the amount of money that they're losing every single year. And so places like Westminster School District, who have made Vietnamese dual immersion like their headline of every single time they advertise a district, they say that because they realize that that is the slogan to get all the parents from other districts and to keep it up. And this is actually why Westminster School District has a lot more money than some other struggling districts in California, because they're taking kids who equal dollar signs from other areas. And then Garden Grove caught wind of it later. It was interesting because activists tried to get Vietnamese dual immersion at Garden Grove Unified School District first, because that's where all the Vietnamese people live. It didn't happen because the trustees were not fully supportive of it, and they weren't sure about it. So Westminster School District said, okay, whatever, we're going to do it ourselves. They did it after seeing all the headlines of the first Vietnamese dual immersion program in California and stuff. Suddenly Garden Grove was like, okay, let's do it because I want to replicate that success. So they opened their own program 3 years later, two, 3 years later. So it's all competition thing. And so I even hear talk about Fountain Valley School District. They want to open their own, but they don't know how to do it. And districts are super competitive too. They have their own whole Vietnamese curriculum that they'll create, but they won't share it to the other district. Why would you? Because you want the kids to go to your district. So then that means
Well,
resource-wise, for a community where these districts refuse to take anything from Vietnam because political stuff, they have to create all these materials themselves, like a whole curriculum's worth of 8 grades and stuff. It's hundreds of thousands and thousands of thousands of dollars. And each one, they're not sharing any of their material, so they're all just competing to do that. So on the bright side, on the surface, it looks like we all want to create a shared vision of Vietnamese language and culture. But the people at the top are not Vietnamese; they're white people, right? Education, there's only like 1% Asian Americans who are in educational, leadership. And so the white people do not think about preserving Vietnamese language and culture or Spanish language and culture when they're making dual immersion programs. What they see is dollar signs. And if, let's say, Vietnamese language and culture did not bring students from outside the district, I firmly believe that they wouldn't do it. So that's the politics part of the education system.
Joseph, I am so appreciative of you sharing the intricate details and knowledge of this political structure inside. But you're not afraid of like getting into hot water. I mean, this is your life. You talk about this so openly on a public, podcast. So you're not afraid of retribution, or I mean, you're really bringing down the dark side of education.
It's definitely possible that it could bite me in the future, but local politics are not that, charged to the sense that, like, I'm not talking about like, Democrat Republican policy, right? Like, maybe, and I'm not running for office currently, so I can say stuff in my youth that maybe I won't get to say later, but definitely, I guess you will. I know people who move up in administration and they become less and less open about, what they talk about. Same thing with politics. It's just how it is. Because now they have to satisfy a certain constituency. I don't have a constituency, so I'm speaking freely.
But I think the things that you're talking about makes perfect sense. But I also think it's kind of good for the ecosystem because the competitive nature of fighting for dollars through trying to push Vietnamese culture and language.
Yeah, it's a good and a bad thing. The pros are that, yeah, it gives each individual district an incentive to open your program and to push it to parents, especially when the top of the leadership are not Vietnamese people. Because before the community has always wanted Vietnamese language in schools, right? And they've been pushing it for 50 years and rejected for about 50 years. And so it's definitely an important way to talk. There's a way of talking to people at the top of education that you don't necessarily talk to lay people, which is, you have to speak into it. How does it bring money to the district? Because district administrators are CEOs of many companies. That's the best way you use to describe it. And so they're thinking about, how do I bring funding to their school? Because that's what their job is. The cons of that is that for the community, let's say Little Saigon, who all we care about is, Vietnamese language schools and preserving our culture, we will get rebuffed by those same people who open those programs, who will say, I'm going to limit it like this. And so let's say at Westminster School District, we have Vietnamese dual immersion at one elementary school and one middle school. At Garden Grove, one elementary school and one middle school. And they're probably going to keep it like that because that's like a good enough, unless expanding it gets even more people to come in, they'll keep it like that because at their core, they're not thinking about Vietnamese language and culture. And so that disappoints some the community, because as a community, we want Vietnamese language and Vietnamese culture and Vietnamese American history in every single school in Orange County, if we can, at least with a sizable Vietnamese population. But until you have Vietnamese American leaders who have that passion from the bottom of their heart to expand it, currently the state of dual immersion programs will be as it is. Where the main focus is about is prioritizing enrollment versus, I want to do it because I love the community. Because those are two different places to come from when you're creating a program and how it turns out. Yeah, how you market it and how many schools you expand it to and how deep into it. Let's say Garden Grove, I think they did it more out of pressure than they did it out of like the bottom of their heart. And so they get a lot less resources. They put a lot less resources into the program than Westminster School District. And so I think the program suffers as a result. And so, yeah, all these politics affect the day-to-day life of just normal teachers trying to teach the language to the kids. And there's all this stuff that happens behind teachers.
And I want to bring up a very absurd detail here. It may or may not be an elephant in the room for some, but for me it is, which is the Vietnamese spoken in Vietnam and the Vietnamese spoken in the United States today is very different. And the curriculum of a Vietnamese grammar or Vietnamese language in elementary school coming from a classroom in Vietnam today looks nothing like what is being developed in Orange County today. And it goes for like the Portland School District and all these other dual language across the country that have Vietnamese. This is something that people in education struggle with, which is there's something going on in Vietnam. There's language being taught in Vietnam, which you could argue is the authentic root of what our language is today. But then there's this 1975, pre-1975, there's this whole strata, this whole layer of dinosaur, language that is useless if you think about the 100 million people that are speaking Vietnamese in Vietnam today compared to the few hundred thousand Vietnamese speakers that we have in the United States today. I mean, there's, I think, 4 million across the world outside of Vietnam. But what is spoken in Orange County is a dinosaur. It's a language that is fossilized in the embers of Garden Grove and Westminster and Little Saigon. Let's face it, this is something that is highly charged and highly debatable. I want to hear your thoughts on it.
It's funny. I can go, for hours on the dark side of education, but this is the topic that gets me, like, my heart beating, because this is what makes people sensitive. And I'm going to push back on dinosaur language a little bit because kind of like how language, the way language develops, language in Vietnam has developed a certain way. And I
Sorry, I was
like
just
to,
being facetious. I
oh, no
completely
worries.
apologize for that.
But I like to think of overseas pre-1975 Vietnamese that spoke in overseas Khmer as like a dialect that like branched off. It's like North Korean's Korean versus like South Korean Korean, where they're separated for 70 years. And so they speak. They're intelligible, but they have different words. Yeah, it's kind of like the same for here. So we preserved a lot of old Vietnamese language that people in Vietnam don't use as much. For example, phi trường versus sân bay. Phi trường is airport. Sân bay is airport. We use a lot of chữ Hán Việt. Hán Việt is Chinese loan Chinese words that came from ancient Chinese. I don't like to say modern Chinese because ancient Chinese included Japan, Korea, Vietnam,
And a lot of our
this
words
different school.
share, we share a lot of it with Koreans and Japanese and Chinese. A
Yeah,
lot of
no,
this.
let's say like in Japanese, to marry, it's kekkon. In Vietnamese, it's get on, right? In Japanese, it's junbi, because I speak Japanese. And Vietnamese, it's chuẩn bị, right? It's very similar.
Very
So,
similar. So to Han, it's all ancient Chinese
yeah,
that our
so
roots share.
phi means to fly, zhường is a place, so the place you fly means airport, where sân bay is thuần Việt, which is pure Vietnamese, more like colloquial Vietnamese, but to people here, it sounds less formal. We like to use Chinese words when we use formal words. We switch up some words around too, like mao dam versus dam bao. There are words that developed in Vietnam that never developed here. Like Vietnamese people here get really triggered if you say the word khoang trang, which is like very, big and magnificent. They would say, no, it's chang lệ or like something like that. And Châu Á or Á Châu, some people say Á Châu. I say Á Châu. Some people say Châu Á. And then little, it's and then also government words. Let's say we say hộ chiếu in Vietnam. They say hộ chiếu for passport or papo, right? Or visa. But then in America, in overseas community, we say sổ thông hành, or we say thực thi for visa. So. A lot of I don't know if T is correct, but we have a lot of different words. But yes, now you come to the politics of Vietnamese community for teaching Vietnamese language and Vietnamese dual immersion. And the politics is that we refuse to teach anything, any materials that have been produced in Vietnam. And there are reasons for this. We're a refugee community. Vietnamese language did not start with Vietnamese dual immersion programs. It started way back in 1975 with these weekend Việt ngữ schools. And so they've been teaching a textbook based off materials that they had in Vietnam pre-1975, which is usually meant for Vietnamese speakers who already know Vietnamese who lived in Vietnam. And then, so they're just trying to learn literature and stuff. At the same time, they want to preserve that language. And so when the school district made up of white people is asking, how do we teach the language and how do I make it conducive to the community that the community likes it? They're actually relying on the curriculum of all of these Việt ngữ schools on the weekend. So it's interesting because a lot of people hate Việt ngữ schools and they hope that, okay, I'm going to put my child in the dual immersion schools because it's better for it, they'll learn Vietnamese better. But one of the issues is that they use exactly the same pedagogy as the same Việt ngữ schools, pre-1975, teach the old way, and not focus on kind of like what a modern second generation, third generation kid needs to learn a language as a second language, not as a first language from Vietnam. They're really careful. The district is really careful because educational institutions are political. So, they refuse to. They have book vetting committees. Here's a story, interesting story. At Westminster High School, for example, a long time ago, they taught this book produced in the Vietnamese American community for the Vietnamese American community. And there was one page in that book that said travel to Vietnam, right? And in that page, there was a little dong. There was a little dong, the yay for the Vietnamese for the Vietnamese currency, and on the dong it has a picture of Ho Chi Minh, and so the community protested the book They had a whole protest against the district, and so they had to recall all of these books and to buy a whole new book. And I talked to the Vietnamese teachers who are Viet refugees themselves, who understand the need for Vietnamese American, pre-1975 thing. But just because of that one picture in a book that was published in America, not in Vietnam, they had to replace the whole thing. And they said the old book was better than the new book. But the new, so they have a new book, and it's in terms of grammar and stuff and vocab, it's not as good, but they had to change it because of pressure from the community. So that pressure is very real for some members of the community, but it also is a new point of tension because there are obviously immigrants who come here from America like 10 years ago, and they come in and they're being told you have to speak this new, you have to speak this way, and you have to teach this language. And so they don't really care. They don't care if they get like Harry Potter from Vietnam or Vietnamese books from Vietnam, because they're not as political as people, who came as refugees. And so that's actually a point of contention among parents as well, who are like, I just want my kids to speak Vietnamese, but the district refuses to buy any books from Vietnam, so my kid has nothing to read, because they don't want to be associated with anything related to Communist Vietnam today, which I say the word Communist Vietnam facetiously, because in their eyes, anything from Vietnam is communist. But that's not necessarily the case. Let's say if a kid, someone translate a publishing house in Vietnam translated Harry Potter to from English to Vietnamese, right? It's not really communist. Yeah, it has some words that older people may not say, but that is just as objectionable as a book like praising, Ho Chi Minh. And I am of the opinion that those two distinctions need to be separated, and that we should let the Harry Potters in and the hungry caterpillars in Vietnamese, where we don't have the resources to translate a library ourselves. And
But you think about
still
this,
be
you think
sensitive to the
about this,
community.
Joseph. How much are we cutting ourselves off from all of this free-flowing information and the beauty of things that are coming from Vietnam, free and clear from the communist government, right? Like just from pure culture in Vietnam that has elements of the new language, of the communist, whatever, of what we as a community is describing as communist language. We are cutting ourselves up from so much culture, like Harry Potter translating in Vietnamese, that uses some of this lingo, and we can't tap into all of the stuff that's being produced in Vietnam because of this artificial sort of like blockage that we created for ourselves as a community.
Here's a study I did when I was an undergrad. I did research in Japanese schools, Japanese language schools on the weekends, and Vietnamese language schools. And what I found that my study found that the kids who went to Japanese language school, and their school was 100% funded by the government, they literally took textbooks straight from Japan and from the Japanese government. The Ministry of Education literally funds overseas communities to help learn. The Korean government does the same thing. The Taiwanese government does the same thing. So they have all that material and money flowing in to help learn the language. So I found my findings was that, those kids in Japanese language school, their language ability was like 200%, faster, their growth than those in Vietnamese school. One, because those in the Vietnamese programs, they're learning an outdated pedagogy, not just the language, but an outdated pedagogy. And then they don't have funding for the Vietnamese government, obviously, because of concerns about communism. They don't have all these resources. And so a Japanese kid, and I have a lot of Japanese friends, but they're Japanese friend, they get these books straight from Japan. They have all these picture books, they have anime. There is a the immersion means to really learn a language, you need to have a reason to speak the language. School's not enough. And I see some kids who go 9 years in the dual immersion program and they still don't learn. Maybe for one reason or another. You need to have a community or something, a reason to consume the language. So Japanese is just a higher language. You consume anime every day, you will get better in Japanese, or if you read books. These kids here in America, they want to speak Vietnamese, but really, to be honest, The only practical use of speaking Vietnamese if you live in Little Saigon is if you live in Little Saigon is to speak with your parents, and you actually don't need that high of a level. But to do that, you need to consume. And if we look at stuff in our community, it's all politics or like old news or advanced literature stuff. But yeah, no, we don't have a lot of kid books that are age that are at the level here because the kids books. Our district doesn't provide them. Some parents don't care. Keep in mind that not every single parent is like a, anti-communist, like we have to teach the right Vietnamese language, 1975. But because of that, that section of parents, the district as a whole, it's safer to just make all of the language like that. And so, yeah.
Okay, so I actually say this quite a bit on my podcast. I always prepare a lot of questions. I didn't even get to any of the questions I prepared.
Sorry.
You and I met because you reached out to me a long time ago about AI, and I know that that's a part of your, beyond the Vietnamese language. I mean, I didn't even know that you knew all this Vietnamese language until we met up in Oregon, on this conference. You and I met through this AI idea of you helping me out with the podcast. And
I'm still doing it.
and the thing is this, I want to really have this discussion about AI and Vietnamese and languages with you among 20 other questions I have prepared that we didn't even reach. We are reaching a point where I think we need to get to a second, a part two of our interview. But I would love to sit down and talk to you because again, like I said, we got through a lot of the wonderful things that I didn't even prepare for. We just got into this cool conversation, but I want to bring you back on for part two. So why don't we end the conversation now, and then we will pick this up part two in a few days, and then we'll just let this rock because there's a lot of things that I think I wanted to talk and go deep about Vietnamese Catholics and the culture that exists today in the diaspora and how much the Vietnamese Catholics have to do with the setup of our Vietnamese American diaspora. I mean, it's very, and I know you know a lot about that because we've worked on another project recently together, and we really dive deep into this idea of Vietnamese Catholics and the influence of Vietnamese Catholics throughout the Vietnamese American diaspora. So, thank you for coming on today, and let's get off and reschedule for part two.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.